Video unavailable. Fuck's sake.
So what other options have you got your end on the StreamYard?
None. None that relate to YouTube settings. That's just microphone and stuff.
Yeah, in my subscriptions it says live now. But when I click on it, it says video unavailable.
Mm.
Right, so let's go back to the channel. Videos. It hasn't got any views. Viewer count, nothing. Firing up StreamYard. Monetization off.
Yeah, make sure you change that.
Public.
It's good. Yeah, it still says video unavailable.
I don't know what to do.
I mean, I'm not sure what to say, really, because I can't see what you can see your end. I mean, you could maybe do a screen share and we can have a look, but it seems pretty simple. I mean, I doubt there's going to be that much more that it's being that you won't be able to see.
I mean, well, in the back end of the channel, it says it's public. If it's public, why is there no views?
Yeah, and when you click on the video, it's nothing. This is unavailable, so.
Yeah, well, it's not public. Like, why is it telling us that it's public when it isn't? Monetization has been switched off again.
Right,
yeah, we're live.
Monetization has been switched off again.
Mate, we're live.
All right.
I've clicked on the video again and.
Right. So is anybody
15 watching us? Debiton just left this.
All right, I can see and hear us now.
Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but we've got action. We've got stuff happening. I'm going to view it on YouTube. So there must be some sort of delay.
Yeah, there probably is a slight delay. Yeah. Evening, everyone in the chat.
Hello there. So how long was that delay? That was about 5 minutes.
Well, it's been like it says live for 3 minutes. There's 47 people, 50 people watching now, so it looks like it's working.
All right. So all right, hello everybody in the chat. This is a bit of a tester because I haven't done a live stream for months and months. Anne Mark, but I like your work for sure. That's the pagan militia's out. Calling us a Christ, jump straight away. Anyway, I've got we'll finally fired up a live stream, and but this will be a little bit knockabout more than usual. But it seems to be okay so far, coming through loud and clear. All right, so we're away, we're up and running again. We've got the chat up, we've got 72 people watching. I'm quite happy how this has gone so far. All right, so everybody's getting the chat warmed up there.
So as soon as you press live, it's going to have recorded that first 3 minutes of us talking. But because of the delay, YouTube won't have. It didn't register on our end.
All right. So, what do you want to do?
Well, I'm just making note of that for next time.
All right. So, we're up and running anyway. I've got Arion Thurbitton here, who's like me handlers, because I'm technologically crap. So, how are you two doing?
Yeah, fine, mate. Yeah, it's nice to be back on. I think that the channel has grown by about 10 times bigger than when I was on in the early days.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I went up, I don't know if people saw on Twitter, but I went up to see Morgoth up where he lives. How long ago was that? That was like a week or two ago. So
a week, yeah. So
yeah, I'm doing good.
It's a funny thing because I've actually got about 8,000 more subscribers or something than the last time I did a live stream. The last time I did a live stream, funny enough, it was with the Lucy Brown drama one, which I've got no end of bloody grief about. And look what's happened today in the news. Well, there you go. Isn't that funny? But I don't really want to get bogged down into that. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens with that. It's funny because it's nice to be able to see the super chats coming in at the side there. But what I wanted to get into a bit is the PewDiePie saga. I mean, it's I actually quite like this because, you know, when you're doing like a big official stream, you don't get to interact with the chat as much, and I can kind of do that a bit more here, which is nice. So is everybody in the chat, like, did they all enjoy the PewDiePie troll of the Anti-Defamation League? What I think, I just watched the E. Michael Jones take on it before, and he was he's like saying it was a really big thing. It's a really big moment, and I agree with him. I think the upside of this is, leaving aside the whole, you know, the big PewDiePie sort of standard crap, I think the big takeaway from this is that we are the good guys now. That's the victory that's been made here. Is for the first time, we come out on the we are on the side of light and goodness, and it's kind of like a turning point in this weird way. And it happens with these weird oddball characters. It's where, because there, I mean, you know, we've got to be careful. They're still censoring YouTube, but the fact is, well, it's always been painted that they are on the side of goodness, even in the name, like sort of anti-hate, the way they put it across, and it always put everybody on the back foot. Nobody wants to be a hater.
And the way that PewDiePie announced, he said he's what's that? He said he's donating to a charity. He's donating $50,000 to the ADL, which fights bigotry in all its forms. So it is like that. That's the way they introduce themselves, even though they're basically this like formed out of organized crime. They go around like huckstering and like shaking people down for protection money.
E. Michael Jones wrote a whole book on the association they had with the gangster. And he pointed out that what was it, Mo Dalitz. And whether or not you're a mafia boss, or to say that he's a mafia boss gets you called an anti-Semite, depended on whether or not the you'd paid money to the Anti-Defamation League, which is interesting in itself. PewDiePie is a snake. Don't be fooled again. Fooled by what? I don't know what there is to be fooled about. He gets a Illuminati nose tattoo.
You know, like the whole history with like how all of this started. He was he started like doing videos where I guess it was around the time of the Trump campaign, where he was like watching Hitler speeches in his videos and wearing army kind of outfits. And then at one point he paid. There was this service where you could pay like a fiver.
I know. Don't read out. Yeah. Don't read that out.
Yeah, and he paid them to say death to all.
Yeah. Stop.
Blank.
There's been
a whole series of things since then where, recently he was giving a list of recommendations for channels, and one of them, it turned out that they had had like a Happy Merchant meme in one of their videos, and he's had like the mainstream media like hounding him for months.
A lot of angry people. I'm surprised at the amount of grief he's getting in the chat. I don't understand that. But I don't know. What do I know? I'm out of touch with these things.
When I watched the video yesterday where he said that he wasn't going to get, I thought it was hilarious. I was laughing really hard when I saw what he did.
When he kind of just said no thanks, I won't be.
Well, like the whole, he's basically like trolled the ADL, and he's exposed all of his audience of like normal people to who the ADL are, and they're all asking questions about who they are, and now they're all exposed to what they do and how they operate. And it's so clearly that they're bad guys.
How much of a troll do you think it actually is, though? Because like, he's got 100 million subscribers, and he says he's changed his mind because of the backlash from his fans. And as we're in these circles all the time, our kind of stuff kind of gets magnified. So I just kind of wonder how much is there, is actually from our sort of guys, or how much is it, you know, how much of the backlash was from people that are kind of adjacent or have just kind of picked up the sort of, you know, our sort of culture and our talking points? Because
I think a good proportion of the backlash is from people who are just anti-censorship and see the ADL as the people who go around censoring, and he's supporting the censorship. And that's what motivated a lot of the backlash, rather than people who are specifically aware of like the ethnic.
Yeah.
It's more the general change in public attitudes towards these big weird NGOs, because there's more of them as well. I mean, you know, Hope Not Hate, it's sort of the little brother of the ADL, and they are absolutely despised. They've got 90,000 Twitter followers, and their tweets get like 10 likes and stuff. And you think if they are on the right, if they have won the argument, and if they are the same rational position, which is just going after all of these extremists, then why are they so despised by so many people? And I think what interests about the PewDiePie thing, I mean, I don't think I've ever watched one of these videos, but I'm certainly not interested in that kind of content. I think it's a general change in public attitudes. That's what interests me.
Yeah, well, how much do you think of it is actually like a hit for the ADL? Or how much do you think is actually going to be seen as a sort of negative blow to the ADL as opposed to PewDiePie? Because, you know,
I think they'll be shocked that it's the sort of the meme culture has reached this far and gone become this big, where, because it's about pressure and it's about power, and the power is now more with let's just take the line that he bowed before pressure. Because whether or not it's a troll, that's actually what he's doing at the meta level. But if in that case, then what the ADL have seen is that they are no longer able to control that narrative anymore. They can in the mainstream media, of course, and within the establishment and everything like that. But in a sense, I mean, I bet there was somebody in the office really wanting to just shut it all down. We just hit the kill switch on the entire internet and shut it all down.
Because that's what they when he announced that he was donating to them, and there was this all this big backlash going. They started deleting comments on the video, and they said it so it would automatically display as newest first rather than top comments. So obviously, they saw that the highest voted comments were all about the ADL, so they switched it over to newest first. But even then, they're all coming in about the ADL. And I think on his subreddit as well, they were there was just a massive lockdown and tons of comments getting deleted, and all the moderators were trying to shut it down there as well.
They were
like annoyed about this backlash, and they were trying to shut it down, but obviously, it's gotten through to him, and on Twitter as well, it seemed like, I think Keem started one where he said, he said, I can't remember what the first one was, but the second one was like, I don't delete my channel, ADL. I've done everything that you've told me to do. And so people were aware of what was going on Twitter. And then there was that Ethan Klein guy, H3H3, who was, there was a few people who were sort of aligned with the Zionists or whatever they are, aligned with the people who run YouTube, were calling those that were outraged at him giving money to the ADL, they were calling people snowflakes and stuff, and it seemed really hollow.
Right. We were laughing the other day, weren't we, Morgoth, about just how sneaky people think the ADL are. You know, I think you put it in a tweet about people were commenting that they were way more upvotes rather than views. Even if it was a glitch, like the sort of point was, people kind of instantly assumed it was a sort of sneaky move by them.
Yeah, the whole thing. I mean, you know, what, it doesn't really matter what you think of PewDiePie. You just look at this whole episode, and you can get, because it's such a big platform that he's got, then you can get a good sort of taste of the public mood, and in that way, it's really interesting. So just the fact that people were saying beforehand, that when the original video went up, that it had more upvotes than people that had actually seen it. And so what they're saying there is that as soon as the ADL are kind of involved or seen as a positive light, there's something suspicious going on. There's something sneaky happening, and they're uncomfortable with it. Like, that's their immediate impression of it.
People immediately assumed that PewDiePie was being blackmailed. And
yeah, yeah. And so this is kind of what I'm saying. It's like they no longer, at least on online, they don't really have the moral high ground anymore. And I think this is the kind of thing that why it's got E. Michael Jones making a video about it. This is pretty much what he's saying. They've the biggest sort of internet star on earth has kind of taken away their moral high ground from. So I think it is one of those things. I think it is a big thing. Go on then.
I'm saying you just look at it now, and it's so absurd that this like corporate group that's grown out of organized crime has just appointed itself the people who are the arbiters of what you are and aren't allowed to say on the internet, and they've somehow got positions on the boards of all these social media companies. And you look at it now, and it's so obviously absurd and wrong that they're in that position. But a couple of years ago, when they first did the adpocalypse, it seemed like it sort of seemed legitimate then. Like, people weren't really like too conspiratorial about it. But now they like, just in the last couple of years or two or three years, they've overplayed and so much to so many people that you just look at it and it seems so absurd now in a way that it didn't before.
Yeah. You got a couple of super chats, mate.
All right. You fancy brasting squirrels rather than fishing. It's funny you should say that, because I was looking at a squirrel today. I'd probably catch more of them if I put my mind to it than the bloody fish. They're not biting. The Spaniards have took all of them. Smitty20, no comment. $4.99, thanks a lot. I'm in the back end of this. Like I say, this is a kind of tester stream for bigger things to come. And I've had to sort of, I'm the worst person with technology in the world, and I'm looking at them from behind the YouTube channel here. So thanks a lot for that, lads. Rian Machrach.
Yeah, so come on, you tight bastards, get your wallets out for Morgoth. I've seen it. To say he has to live frugally is an understatement. You know, you go into his flat and it's just like an old laptop, a fishing rod, a dog, a big stack of books, and a bottle of whiskey on the side.
Oh, all right, bloody hell. Stop laying it on. Right, so let's see what goes with the PewDiePie thing. I think there's a sea change, and I've noticed it for a while, and I think it's interesting to know that that meme, that Mitchell and Webb meme, where that's like they're two national socialists. All these words, you don't know what words because of these fuckers. It picks it up in that they're algorithms. So anyway, it's that one where they say, are we the bad guys now? And the ADL won't be thinking that, but that is kind of the thing. It's like the politically incorrect youngsters have become the good guys in a way.
Yeah, I wonder if Hope Not Hate feel a similar thing sometimes when they're kind of, you know, when the shutters are down and the office is closed and they're just seeing the amount of kind of backlash they get all the time.
Yeah.
Similar thing, you know.
Yeah, so another thing that I saw which was interesting was on Twitter before, because I've been busy today and I've just had a sort of browse through Twitter to a couple of talking points for our test stream here. And I saw that Rams Paul had posted this thing where the Americans are going to broadcast like degenerate radio into Hungary. Like it's the same thing that they did with during the Cold War, and where they would, you know, they would probably post stuff in there about how great capitalism was and the free market and whatnot, and how awful the Soviet Union was, and undermine them, like subversive propaganda. And it turns out they're going to do it again, but with this time with Hungary. And I was thinking about it, like, what exactly are they going to send in? Are they going to send, like, how are they going to promote America in Hungary to make America and the modern American way of life look better than what Hungary is? I don't know how you would even do that now.
And surely the people in Hungary are aware of what's going on. They have these campaigns, like these posters everywhere about George Soros, and that the people support Orban because they know that he is pro-family, and so that they are like, how can they just come in and promote degeneracy? Surely, like, they'll have to do it in some kind of subversive way, or try and pretend that it's normal, or
they'll say the kind of the usual things about, they'll say that they'll kind of cloak it in the language of kind of human rights and being pro-democracy and pro-liberalism. They'll just kind of take that as a given good.
Is it not too late for that? Because another thing that Ram said on this little thread that he did was that Hungary have they've got access to the BBC, they've got access to CNN, they've got access to all of the Western media propaganda outlets, and yet they don't want, in fact, it might work against them. You can imagine a couple of Hungarian fellas sitting down the pub, and then one of them puts on BBC One for a laugh, and looks at it and thinks, Christ almighty, that could be us. That's what they want us to live like. Put on an episode of EastEnders for the background, and look at it and think, this looks like a horror show.
So do you think that this times in with, because I saw that the BBC News put like one of their long reads out. It's like a sort of long defense of Soros, something like it was something like, is this guy really the bogeyman of the hard right or something? And it's a similar thing where they were saying like he's just, all he wants to do is just promote human rights, democracy, liberalism, and the same thing. So do you think that article is kind of timed in with this?
I don't know. I didn't see that part. I just browsed it on Twitter. It was just interesting to me that the idea that they've already been bombarded with propaganda, like that's already there, and so. We would often talk about how, the normies in the West have been brainwashed by the propaganda. And in Hungary, like, they've got the propaganda and they're still not brainwashed. And yet when you think about it, we got the policies pretty much alongside the propaganda. It was almost as if the propaganda was more like a painkiller like a normalizing drug, rather than just overtly brainwashing the population. And so in Hungary, you see that they've had the propaganda, you know, not as much as we have, but just to a degree they have, but they didn't get the policies. So they can, it's like this complete disconnect. And so when you're looking back, let's say they, like you're sitting in a Hungarian pub having a couple of pints, and you know you got the television in the corner there, and if they put like EastEnders on just sit with the sound off, you can imagine them just laughing at it and saying that looks an absolute shit show. I thank God that we have Viktor Orban here.
Yeah, and even EastEnders isn't anywhere near like an accurate representation of what the actual East End of London is like now.
Yeah, even EastEnders isn't. It looks like that. It would actually be like 90% non-white, and they'd be speaking like 15 different languages. That's what the East End of London actually is.
Yeah. Schools with like 100 different languages, 200 different languages being spoken.
200 languages in a school. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how they would actually, what would they do? I can at least understand it if you're queuing up for bread. But I cannot understand what, like, the neoliberal machine, how do they convince people who already know the agenda and have rejected it? How do they then say, like, it's all so great? Are they going to say that, hey, look at these cool feminists with their purple hair and all these transgenders? Like, do you want loads of this? And they obviously don't. It's absurd. I can't see how it would work. And in fact, when you look at, you know, we're on about the Anti-Defamation League, what they're trying to do is it's the other way around. It's the West who's obsessed with subversive propaganda. That's what they call hate. So this YouTube channel, where you've got to be very careful of what I'm saying, is really from the eyes of the sort of the establishment in the West. It is itself the subversive propaganda coming from another direction, and the West's trying to shut it down.
Yeah, and again with the PewDiePie thing, I saw that the BBC and lots of other of the sort of the standard mainstream media, they've reported on it specifically with the way they framed it in the headlines is PewDiePie, like, you know, he cancels his donation to anti-hate group. You know, I noticed that lots of headlines haven't actually mentioned ADL. They specifically frame it as, you know, an anti-hate group, so that the average kind of normie is going to see that and instantly kind of, you know, they're going to know exactly what they should think about that.
That goes into that thing that I said on the last stream that we did about this, about love, hate, morality, where they always define what they do as under everything that they do is under the banner of love, and everything that they dislike or that goes against their narrative, they define that as hate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so even when it's just like one guy making video like Minecraft videos, and the other side is this giant corporate entity that's formed out of organized crime, they're still like anti-hate, and this other guy playing Minecraft to children is this evil Nazi or whatever who represents hate.
And it works. Well, it does actually work. You know, I've worked with these with a couple of people who, you know, they've literally said straight up to me, like, oh, you know, I've chosen the path of love and you've chosen the path of hate. You know, and I just don't see how we can ever reconcile that. So it has worked. Those two paradigms. It is in people's minds. Absolutely.
Yeah. Even though it's just this really simplistic dichotomy, it does sink into people's minds and in terms of mass people. The mass man.
Yeah. Okay, but then you're going to end up, we're going to have, nobody ever accepts that they're the bad guys. So what we've got now is where people, they say PewDiePie's fans, but it's actually millions and millions of young people are online because, you know, they're alienated by the mainstream culture. And then what you can think that both sides are then going to say, well, we are the good guys. And in the past, that might just be a few blokes on a forum and then having meetups in a pub somewhere now you're talking about tens of millions of people. So it totally changes the dynamic. And so what now you can have tens and tens of millions of people, and they will say, well, the ADL are the bad guys, which is kind of what's happened in this situation. So, and another problem is that where do they go? Once that dichotomy's been established, the people who are, let's say, the youngsters on the internet, the PewDiePie fans in this case, the nationalists and all politically incorrect and all this broad populist swathe, they are then let's say the establishment are going to continue looking for ways to shut them down, and the populists have got no way of stopping the establishment. So it is just going to be every time they shut something down, they are going to reveal themselves more as sort of morally illegitimate in the eyes of the people they're shutting down. And there's too many of them now to sort of, you know what I mean, to silence entirely. We've passed that certain threshold. I said it in a BitChute video a few weeks ago. And you wonder when they're going to, because they're not just going to give it all up. You know, they're not going to let us have free speech. Let's just keep it on YouTube, free speech and stuff. They can't let us have that because it'll gnaw away at their narrative. So what do they do next? What's their next move when censorship becomes self-defeating for them?
I think at that point in the past, they tend to, like, some people may allege that they do, like, false flag shootings or to change the narrative.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard that one of the ways to sort of get through to people, especially in the sort of Anglo world, is the appeal to the lack of freedom of speech. Because I think even if you remove all of the ideology, I think there are a lot of people who, especially the sort of in the British, who kind of have this, they still hold that as they still kind of think they have it, and they still hold it as a high sort of moral principle. So I think, you know, even if you're not ideologically clued up, just appealing to that, it doesn't sit well with a lot of people.
Right. I'm just having a look. I'm just having a look at the super chats, and they don't.
Before you say that, how do you think that the kind of liberalist or like classic liberal people deal with the fact that it is like the ADL that has the power to do this is an ethnic interest group that has appointed itself censors of how do they just say? I see some of them saying that the ADL is like this censorship group, but how they just never address the fact that it is an ethnic interest group.
If anyone denies that, all you have to do is go to the ADL Wikipedia page and read literally the very first line of the entry, and it's specifically
they just sort of skip over it. All the kind of people who call themselves centrists, they just completely ignore it.
It's really awkward. It's a really awkward situation for them to be in. And it's their problem, really, at the end of the day. We are kind of just it's not a big surprise, you know. But it's a real I don't know how they deal with it. I don't know what they're going to do with it.
There was that meeting in Jerusalem recently with Barbara Lerner Spector and Rothschilds and all these people from around the world meeting to decide a common destiny for their people, or deciding what's in the interest of their people. And it wasn't that long ago that Sargon Rakad was speaking about how white interests, that's such an absurd thing to say, yet these are like the most powerful people in the world who have established an ethno-state, and they're meeting together to decide what's in the interest of their people. And it's just like radio silence about it. There's no jokes about how like the interest of their people is like a meaningless concept, or what all the things that you said about us. He only speaks out against it when it's white people who want to.
Yeah, well, of course, for us, it's been made illegal, though, in many different ways.
Yeah,
it's actually a crime.
Yeah, I'd, 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 I mean, you can watch. They just sort of gloss over it. I don't know how they deal with it. They don't.
It's absurd that they can still have so many people watching them and believing in this narrative when they're just they're doing it in the open now. They're meeting in the open to talk about these things, and they're open. There's so much evidence about it, and there's still so many people who just skip over it. And how can he still have this huge audience and all these people watching when he's so obviously just a liar?
All right, so let's just get on these super chats, because like I said, this is a bit of a test stream, and I can't actually see all of what's been written, so I can't see the end of it. I'll sort something out better for next time. So I've got Ginger Roden for £3, no comment, thank you very much. I've got Happy D, I think it might be Happy Days, £5. Moggy, if you ever need an out, come and say in my private ethno state. I don't know what the rest of it says. Maybe I can do something with... Anyway, thanks for the offer, and you never know. Rhiann Mac is back again. Thanks a lot, everybody. I'm a programmer if you want any help me. Well, yeah, it looks like I could do with all the help I can get. 3D neat drinks for the lads and lass. We are the good guys. Walk Johnny J. Again, I think it's chopping everything off. I'll sort this out for next time. Thanks a lot there. So the as far as the centrists, and I did a video on BitChute about it. It's not just like it. Another problem is that this is like their core value. This is what it's all about. It's all about. You've got the collectivism and you've got the free speech thing, and they won't take them both head on. But I do think there does seem to be some dissonance going on. But it's kind of like we have to do all the heavy lifting for their ideals. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the thing I think you said before. I'm not sure if you said it in a video, but about how the truth is like a kind of black hole, in the sense that it kind of warps everything around it, and just the sort of hard reality. Whether people like it or not, when you sort of get the closer you get to that, the more it kind of warps you and sucks you in. And that's obviously what's happening with, you know, there's obviously been tons of the kind of centrist types who, you know, would have sort of stayed in that area as a kind of what's the word, as a gateway, you know, to us, because of the truth is so kind of hard to deny if you're actually honest with yourself.
I mean, it's interesting to think about this, the idea of defending free speech, which, to be honest, they all do, you know, all these centrist types, these, but I mean, I pay attention to Spiked Online quite a bit, you know, and it's always the easy battles that they pick. But what happens when, in order to defend free speech, you're called like fascist pig or an anti-Semite? What happens if that's the cost? What happens if you want to defend free speech and you're called like a racist and all the rest of it?
I think I think that's already happening, isn't it?
Well, is it?
Yeah. It's like a huge kind of like student-y type movement who are kind of at that point already and understand that freedom of speech means our kind of guys being allowed to talk, which is just completely off the table. So they're going to, they shut that down in their own way with all their kind of usual words of racist, fascist, etc.
The centrist people who do defend freedom of speech, the people who call themselves centrists who defend freedom of speech, they already do get called racists and all of the other buzzwords.
Fair enough. I mean, I do see them as being part of this wider populace in relation to somebody like PewDiePie. I do see them as being in this wider populist kind of internet thing. But you know, what they're like? They're like the Arcadians on 300. They're kind of, you don't send them in when it gets really hot and heavy or any really heavy duty kind of arguments, but they're good for taking down SJWs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that you follow Spike more than I do, but I mean, yeah, like you said, they always seem to kind of go after these sort of easy battles, and I just wonder how long that can last, you know.
Another thing is they never really have like a sort of natural state of man argument, you know, like a core thing. I mean, Brendan O'Neill's been great on Brexit. That's really why I've been reading his stuff on Brexit, and then you see on the site there's some other things, and you kind of click around a bit. But I think on the main ideology, they've been cooked by Quillette, which is a sort of fancier version. But on the Brexit thing, he does good stuff, you know, and he's always going on about, he's a real kind of populist against the Westminster sort of Guardian elite. And I think, well, what is it that you think the people actually want? Because at least the sort of the lib shit establishment, at least they kind of have an agenda, even though it's evil, and you know they're working on behalf of the ADL. And at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to if you follow the money. But what is it that the centrists think the natural state of man is? And I think it's funny because in that way, the liberals, they understand that if they do take a pressure off, then it'll sort of drift its way back into ethnic solidarity and something very far to the right. But a lot of the centrists assume that if you take the pressure off, everybody is by default a sort of individualist. And if you can just leave them alone, you know, I don't buy that at all.
So do you think people like Mike Stuckbury, like, although he, like, obviously he's evil and all that, but do you think that he's actually sort of more in the game than maybe the more sort of centrist types, the sort of the Spikes types? Do you think the fact that
they could but he's I think yes, because he's more in the trenches, and so he understands that there's never going to be any kind of real centrism. It's going to be one extreme or the other. Another point of it is that for a lot of the people who are in deep with the establishment, with the globalists, and I would include Mike Stutchbury in this, and his ilk, is that they've got right to be fearful of losing this because they've got themselves in so far. I can understand it. But in the same, someone like Brendan O'Neill isn't that far in it. You know what I mean? I'm not making any threats or anything like that. I know what he's like. All you've got to do is take a look at his bloody Twitter feed and see the replies that he gets. If his side of this loses, it's not going to be that nice, I think. That's how extreme things have gotten this country.
Yeah. And things like the people like Delling Paul and Brendan O'Neill, they must have like tons of our guys in their replies as well, telling them kind of what's going on or posting links. Like there's no way they can ignore all of that constantly on Twitter.
Well, they work for Breitbart, which is a that was basically founded by Netanyahu, and there's articles about how it was born in Israel, so they must know the score as well.
Yeah, and you look at the Breitbart comments, and people are sort of getting increasingly pissed off.
Don't they just have a blanket ban on, like, whenever someone tries to bring up certain topics, they just censor the comments, and on Breitbart, I don't really go there.
Yeah, I've seen lots of people in Morgoth's comments saying they've been banned. Their second account, third account's been banned for talking about.
I've been banned from Breitbart about 15 times, and I was just being banned all of the time, and I mean, I've mentioned this before, but I got banned so often from the Telegraph and Breitbart that what I did was set up a kind of Tolkien-esque avatar name so that when I came back on, people would know it was me. So, you know, it would all be these kind of, all my avatar names would sound like something from Tolkien. And the last time I got banned from Breitbart, somebody came down like a modder, could have been the Telegraph, And they were like, you know, why don't you just go and set up your own blog? And I did. And it just so happened that I was me thing at the time was Morgoth, and I named my blog Morgoth's Review. And so that's how it started. And now, of course, I get me balls battered off all the Christians asking why I've named myself after Satan. Like, is there something sinister behind all of that? And that there isn't at all. I mean, it could have been worse. At least I didn't call it. At least I wasn't stuck on Frodo.
But at the end of the day, that the people who write for Breitbart and the people like Katie Hopkins, they're basically doing propaganda for the people who are flooding our country with immigrants and opening up the borders, even though they're doing the propaganda to misdirect people. So they are just as guilty for everything that's going wrong in this country as the people who are just openly anti-white, like Mike Stutchbury.
Yeah, well, that is the nature of the kosher sandwich, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of is what it is. Those people, the Tommy Robinson, the Katie Hopkins, that is the other side of the bread.
I mean, that's the other thing that's happened at the years that I was just sort of thinking about how it was all like hijinks and fun with the whole PewDiePie thing, and then you got like Tommy Robinson Crusoe coming out of jail with his beard on, and I just thought, all right. I mean, I've said my piece, and I don't want to sort of just make all of this content where I criticize them, and I'm not going to do it here either. I just want to say that I'm just kind of bored with it. And I think it's much, when you see what Laura and Mark have been doing with these, Laura's, what the We Were Never Asked project, I just think that's so much more valuable than whatever's going to come down this like cult of personality.
Yeah, it's much better. So we really need to, at this point, be doing positive, constructive things and setting up our own movement. And
I mean, I can imagine. I don't know what the stats are on that. These, when they've gone out and they've asked all these people, do you want to become a minority in your own country? I think
70% said that they don't want to become a minority. I think about 2% said that they don't want to become a minority, and the others, well, I was told that basically the people they don't want to become a minority, but the rest of them, like, the impression that they got was that they didn't really want to say that because they knew that it was like the politically incorrect answer. So basically only 2% of people have said that they think it's a good thing that if we become a minority in our own country.
Well, okay, but I can imagine that being like a hand grenade being tossed into the discourse if it gets enough traction.
It's the total opposite. Like, she did that in response to an Indian guy who was pushing around and his poll was getting published in The Guardian where it was like 90% of people think that immigration is a good thing or something. And then Laura goes out and does this actual real survey and finds that it's the exact opposite.
Yeah. And I think the wider point is that when you do that kind of activism, because, you know, everybody gets, when are we going to go out and make a change? When are we going to get off the internet? Now, that's all well and good. But what it's, I think when you can see what Laura's done, what's great about it is that she isn't the story. The statistics and people's, like, what people are thinking on the streets is the big story here, not Laura herself. Whereas with Tommy, it's always like Tommy's the story. And this is what I just thought, like, oh, here we go again.
But did you notice
I don't want to get too bogged down on that again. Like,
did you notice in that video that hit piece that they did on Mark Collett, where they were talking about, oh, we love Tommy. We care about Tommy. All our support is going for Tommy. Oh, Tommy's heard what's going on about this, and Tommy is angry. They speak to them like children. And you watch the like their rallies and stuff, they do the same where they try, and it's like speaking to children to build a personality, but that's, it's so brazen, and it's just embarrassing to, once you realize that that's what they're doing.
Yeah, and it was that, it was also like, I hear that this has come up, because once I start, and I get all kinds of shit for it as well, and it's like, he's a hero, but no, right, let's just, when he did the hit piece, he was in jail, so let's get that clear.
Hang on, Morgan, before you start, you've got another super chat that's timing out as we speak.
Timing out? What does that mean? How can the time out?
Well, you know it. You know what I mean? It's it will eventually sort of disappear that you can't.
All right. It's hard to see on the thingy. Right, I'll go.
I'll paste it in here. It's £10 from Nick X. He says, "Is Theverson going to re-upload his videos? They were real works of art and need to be seen by as many as possible. Also goes for Granville, Thorndike, and expanding Overton. Beautiful and affirmative vids." So I can see why. Theverson wanted to interrupt the flow of conversation.
I see why he was so concerned about that one. Right, I'll leave that one to you.
Yeah, I've uploaded them to the new channel, mate. So if they're there just for completion, they're on BitChute, as same as Granville Thorndike's. His are on BitChute as well.
Right. I think, I was thinking maybe I could do a Granville special or something on my channel, because I did, you know, he was posting in my blog in the early days. It would be nice to do that, a sort of homage to Granville Thorndike's lovely videos. We'll see. But on the other back, just getting back to the other video, when it was like he'd been deplatformed from everything, and then all of a sudden it was decided that the you-know-whos, it was in their interest that he had a platform again. And so the channel and the video came back. And it was like that spaceship coming out the wormhole of the Event Horizon. Just where did that come from?
Yeah, it's like his handlers in Mossad like had to ring up the ADL and say, "Oh, can you do us a favor on this one?"
We need a favor. This is a story. This is what's going down. We need the channel back, and this is why. And it was like, yeah, no problem. We'll get that sorted right away. Right. So we've got some dead air there.
Maybe we can take some comments from the chat, as it's a bit more of an informal one. We don't normally do that.
Does anybody have any questions in the chat? I don't know if there's a delay in this chat. So
there's a couple in there slagging you two off.
Really? Where?
I like Morgoth, but these other two sound like they've been lobotomized. Oh, hey, that's harsh.
It's like the Southern Gang, the Northern Gang, isn't it?
It's what?
It's like the Southern Gang versus the Northern.
Is it? Or is that what's going on?
Well, I only got told like a couple of hours before we were doing this stream, so I wasn't really sure what we were going to be speaking about.
Yeah, there's no preparation gone into this whatsoever. I just wanted to see if this worked. I mean, we spent like 3 hours on a couple of weeks back, like in a private hangout, trying to go through OBS, and it was. I nearly had a nervous breakdown at the end of it. Like, I have to say, I hate this shit. People say, "Oh, it's Boomer." You don't know the half of it. It's a lot worse than that. I just can't stand this crap. Do you plan to do more live streams in the future, Morgoth? Yes. That's kind of what this is. Yeah, this is more of a low-key one, because I'll go into the future and we'll get people on, and I think I might call it Friday Night with Morgoth and Friends or something like that, and make it more of a regular thing. Because I've had I've done 3 months of just non-stop standalone videos, and I think it's nice to sort of loosen it up a bit and make things a bit freewheeling. I mean, I like the I like doing the live streams and getting people on. I mean, one idea I've kicked around is that there's people on who are like just starting out. I get emails and stuff. I got a one off a lad the other day saying, "Can you get us on a live stream? Because I've got a channel He's called Otto or something. I forgot. And I thought what might be fun is if we do that in the future where you get like new characters on, you know, and nobody's heard of them before, and you're not sure what you're going to get. I think that would be quite good to do.
Yeah, I mean, possibly it could just open the floodgates, though. Like, I think they would have to be, you'd have to have, do a bit of research or maybe talk to them in private first, as opposed to just have letting them on to your 20,000 sub channel just completely fresh.
Yeah, oh, well, yeah. You'd have to, you know, you got to, somebody who's put a bit of effort in, but, you know, and it's not like I've got that big of a channel either, but I've always, like, even at the blog, I would, like, people would send us stuff and I would post it and everything like that with a link back to theirs. But I just like to sort of kick the shit around with the lads as well. And when you're doing just non-stop, like, solo videos, it's something that gets missed a bit. And I'd prefer to live stream on my own channel than on other ones as well. So it's a better crowd.
Someone keeps asking you to talk about Jonathan Bowden.
I don't know what there is to say. He's becoming, I mean, you know, there's the, he has become like a sort of mystic. I've just saw that Countercurrents has something, that there's a new book out or something. And Bowden's become more like this nationalist mystic, I think, and for most people, he is the entry point because it makes it cool to be on the far right. And he would just say it like that, just to be on the far right, and Bowden does make it cool. I mean, I just look through my Twitter followers and there's endless amounts of sort of parodies and memes of Bowden that follow me on Twitter and you two as well. It's just this general thing, and it is great. I mean, as far as like his ideas, you cannot really fault it. And I've been reading into this stuff for years, and I'm still nowhere near to really understand half what he got on. But because what's so great, of course, is that he would sort of intertwine a speech on Nietzsche or Heidegger or something with what was going on, like in the current, it's 10 years ago now, what was going on in the politics of the day.
Yeah, really unique. And still, you can listen, even if you've heard them all hundreds of times, you can still put on any of those speeches and there'll be something new which you missed, you know, the previous time, and something else that you know, you appreciate fresh again when you listen.
Yeah. Keith Woods or Riot. Keith Woods will definitely be coming on. I mean, well, I know for a fact he is. I spoke to him in private about doing live streams again. So Keith will definitely be on.
You got two more super chats, by the way.
Oh, bloody hell.
They're in the private chat.
Private chat. Oh, hey. Oh. Lady Rotha. There she is. There's me, lady. She never misses a stream. 15. Oops, I missed the start. That was us panicking because we didn't know how to get it on YouTube. Sam Sheridan. Thanks a lot, lady. Sam Sheridan, £5. Do you see UKIP making any kind of comeback if there is a general election? Party politics isn't my strong point, but I think it's funny because, you know, we give the centrists a hard time of it, but they do seem, in regards to people like the ADL, they do seem to be the least cooked in that regard, compared to like For Britain, who I had high hopes for. And then who else is there? I don't know. You've got the Nigel Farage Brexit Party just pushing it.
Hasn't the new UKIP leader, is it Richard Brain or something? He came out. He was speaking out against anti-white racism and speaking out yeah. about how the society is rigged against white people. And
yeah,
that's
yeah.
pretty cool. But I can't see UKIP. They're sort of finished after what Sargon did to them, aren't they?
Well, yeah, it could be. I mean, you know, the Brexit Party isn't helping at all. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe they could. I don't know. But
what do you think about the Brexit Party?
I don't like them. Every
day they seem to be posting about how, oh, look at our new candidates, and they're all like Nigerians and Indians and like former communists. And it's just non-stop shit from Brexit Party. It's a total joke.
It's like the TPUK thing, isn't it? It's like, let's not do we're against identity politics, but here's like a ton of candidates which are sort of playing directly into that, or identity politics for everyone else but whites.
I mean, it's in this regard that I was talking about Laura and then about what Mark Collett's got coming up. This is the new organization which is still in the works, which he was talking about the other night. And so it'll be nice when we've got our own thing to shill, rather than like looking at other groups and saying, well, what are they doing? What are they doing? But it'll be nice to say, well, we are doing it better and we've got our own thing and we're gonna nudge that along. That's how I see it going in the future.
Who do you think would win if there was actually an election in October? Who do you think would actually win right now?
I've got no idea.
I think the Conservatives would probably come out on top. It's just the way that the voting system in this country works. It's just rigged in their favour, basically.
Yeah.
And now with Brexit, they're going to present themselves as the party of Brexit. They would take it, I think.
All right, so we've got Red Dips. Hey, Morgoth, I know that sounds retarded, but have you seen They Live? It's been way more relatable since the rise of neoliberal global homo phenomenon. It has, and it's come full circle. Now, of course, I've already sort of used up all me.
This is about line. They Live.
Yeah.
So Have you seen, there's like a meme where it speaks about when they put on the glasses and they see what the secret message behind what it's trying to say. Some of them are like get married and have children. Like the hidden messages in They Live are actually more beneficial and more benevolent than the hidden messages in our propaganda now, when they're even more brazen about it.
Yeah, it's
so it's supposed to be like a dystopian thing, but it's actually more benevolent than what we have now.
Yeah, so I've already used up my 9 lives on saying edgy stuff. I got that out of the way at the start. But the John Carpenter's had to come out and say, no, the movie isn't about that group. It's about the Ronald Reagan and neoliberalism. Problem is, it means the same thing. It still means it's about that group, and then sort of these neocon neoliberals taking over the Republican Party. It amounts to the same thing. You don't get out of it like that. But yeah, that kind of old school folksy conservatism is there. What he's doing, like what we would think of as now, is this sort of wholesome trad stuff that in the 80s was thought of as being the brainwashing. When what you should be, it's really weird like that. It's really inverted itself in that way.
Yeah, it's also this sort of similar thing about if you were to say that, like the Polynesians or the Chinese control America, people would kind of look at you like, what's this guy talking about? Like they wouldn't take it seriously at all. And if someone accused John Carpenter of saying that, you know, he was, I have to be careful here, but. I think people know what I mean. Like when you say it's a certain group, suddenly everyone kind of freaks out and people take that very, very seriously, which tells you quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, but the idea that there is this kind of strange shape-shifting group is there. It is there in the zeitgeist. Or that you are being controlled and manipulated. And you, because They Live was a sort of a forerunner of the Matrix. And so that thing has been around for a long time. It's just that you're not allowed to say like who it is, because then you know then you get banned and then your life's destroyed. It's and yet people can't, even just the fact that that's happening is like evidence of it. You know, But as you see that there's limits to how much they can get away with, and we saw it with PewDiePie. The 1980s is one of the things what I'm going to like doing about live streams is that when I have an idea or something for a video, instead of doing that, I can just kind of go off on one on a live stream for about 10 minutes instead, which is kind of easier. And then I can have like longer videos, standalone videos. But I've been thinking about doing like a longer video on the 80s, because what we see in the 80s is in the 70s, you get the Cultural Revolution in the late 60s. And then there's this huge sort of antagonism and anti-military feeling. And then that goes through the 70s. And America, in relation to Hollywood, America really seemed to lose confidence in itself in the 1970s. And you can see it in movies like Chinatown and Taxi Driver, even The Godfather to a certain degree, The French Connection as well. And what happened is, I think there was some sort of recognition that this isn't very healthy, because certain people want America to be powerful because it can use that power overseas. And they begin to formulate themselves and go into the Republican Party. And then you get Ronald Reagan. And then when you go into the 1980s, you get this sudden switch in Hollywood content. And it all of a sudden becomes the soldier is resurrected. And you can see that play out in First Blood. So and in First Blood, they actually confront the demonization of the troops and the soldiers. And he mentions a lot about how the hippies were calling him a baby killer and everything like that. First Blood's actually one of my favorite movies. And then by the time you get Rambo 2, you see that really it's that America is back, and then somebody's going to pay for all of the hell of the 1970s. Why did the 1970s happen? Who's to blame? And who they blame are these bureaucrats. That's that, and these mercenaries, these NGOs. So all of the blame for the misery that America had gone through was put down there. They bring the soldiers back, Rambo brings the prisoners home, and it ends that cycle. And then what you see in Rambo 3 is just outright neocon propaganda. And so you can see that it was going on this trajectory throughout the 80s and then into the 90s as well, but the 90s have fizzled out a bit. I just think that's an interesting thing.
Yeah, and people often say that the 80s was the kind of last decade of white optimism. And you can kind of see that reflected, obviously, in the films and the culture and the music and the fashions and all that kind of stuff. But I have slightly mixed feelings as well, because, you know, I've heard John David Ebert say that The Godfather was like the last kind of tragic film, like the film that actually kind of embraced the sort of the, you know, like the great tragedy, the great sort of tragic drama. So, but I think that which we don't have now at all, like we don't have that sort of, is kind of quite alien to people, the idea of kind of the, you know, the sort of the great epic tragedy where things don't have the kind of happy ending in lots of ways. And, I think there is something to be said about that. I have a mixed thing, because that is something that we have actually lost as well, is this sort of real sense of tragedy in great works of art.
The great Rambo conspiracy theory. If you hear it here first, if you see that out on the internet, remember that was mine. The Godfather as well, and those movies by the Italians like Scorsese and Goodfellas, but the Godfather, that level of social commentary as well, you don't get it anymore. You can't. So it was, the interaction which the various ethnic groups had in The Godfather, all the Goodfellas, they were all of the people were racially aware, very, very racially aware. And so this idea that the America was all of these, a sort of this classic liberal, and they were all individualists living the American dream, It's never been like that. It's just complete fantasy. And you can see it, even if you don't have all of these really foreign groups, just the way the you-know-whos, the Italians, and then the more sort of Anglo and Germans interacted with each other, and they all had specific places in the society, and they were all at each other's throats all of the time. So the idea that America has always been this happy melting pot, even within the European context, is quite ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's weird, though, because I'd say that films now are as racially aware as they've ever been, but just in a different way. Not in a kind of, you know, they're racially aware in the sense that, you know, all the casting is, you know, extremely kind of, they all know exactly who, they all know what roles to fill and how many sort of, you know, people need to be represented. And it's just, it's never kind of seen in a, you know, it's very different to The Godfather. You wouldn't get kind of people being openly anti-Semitic. You know, that wouldn't be part of a plot line, but the films are still, you know what I mean? They're still racially aware as they've ever been. Like, it's just, it's sort of morphed into just kind of extreme anti-whiteness.
Yeah. Yeah. And if something like The Godfather was more realistic as to how these groups actually behaved, in so you had the Jays were sort of in the, I'm not saying this is the case, I'm just talking about a movie here, ADL, that they were like the people who were best with money, and then the mob, the Italians were like the muscle, and then you would have the Irish and is in the roles of police, and then it was like the Anglo, the WASPs, who actually had their hands on these the institution of power and in government, and in, they were the feds and so on. So they were all these different ethnic roles were clear, and that's kind of a realistic depiction of how it was as well. But some things are like uncomfortable, of course. There was actually an attempt by the Italians to set up their own sort of anti-defamation league in the 1970s because they were so tired of being lumbered and sort of, this is a different thing where all of them, the mafia, the mob, it wasn't actually as Italian as the Hollywood movies depict. But people like Scorsese and Coppola, they did like that because they could indulge their Italian background. But generally speaking, the whole mob thing that Hollywood pushed as being this very, very Italian thing, it wasn't quite as Italian as the masters of Hollywood would have us believe.
Yeah, but I've heard people say that The Godfather is actually an extremely subversive film precisely because it's kind of laid that the myth of the Italian gangster and it covered up so much of what actually went on.
Even in Italy, the mafia there is Levantine, isn't it?
I don't know about that. It's mainly Sicilian. It was descended from Sicilian clans. I mean, it's easy to go all the other way and like sort of, you know, white knight for the Italians. I think there was an element of both. But at any rate, they were both in it to rip off the sort of Northern Europeans. Casino is a good one because you see all three groups. In Martin Scorsese's Casino, this was another blog post that I never got around to making. But what's interesting about Casino is that you can see the Jays and the Italian mob and then the kind of good old boys who aren't cooks. And the language that they use, I can't possibly say the kind of racial slurs and stuff they were using in that in Casino. I can't say that anything like it on YouTube. And again, they were all had their own interests and they were all put in together. And it's a sort of three-way war between like the muscle, the people in local government, and then the people who are actually the money men. Let's say the money men.
The money masters.
Yeah. We've got another super chat, Darren Harrison. I know Darren. Hello, Darren. £5. Thank you very much. Arya needs to make a death pun. Also, what position would each of you take if you were put into power? Oh no!
Well, that's an in joke that we have. So honestly, I'm getting a bit sick to death of that. I guess I should say.
What is? I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so it's an in joke. You wouldn't understand. also, what position would you? I guess what would you be? Iron dictator, Morgoth.
Yes, pretty much. Pretty much. it's one of those things where I could just go on and on and on and on and on. But I cannot see it on YouTube, and I cannot live stream on BitChute. But yeah, changes.
What about you, Theberton?
I don't know. I saw that. I really don't know. I guess I'd have a higher up would kind of deem that for me and put me in the right, in the sort of suitable role.
Morgoth, where would Theberton be in your cabinet?
Probably culture or something like that.
We sort of have the private joke of the, unlike the worm tongue character in Lord of the Rings, aren't I?
Yeah. So, all right. So if there was us three in a government, I'd probably put Arya in charge of justice because she can be a bit psychotic. Because I think it should be the most merciless, which is what we need. And I'd probably put Thanet in charge of the BBC.
There'll be some changes around here.
Oh, hey, look at the chat's flying away. Right, what we got next?
I'm not sure. I don't have any prep. I don't, like I said, this is a bit kind of unrehearsed. Did you have anything else to talk about?
Talk about that. I don't know what. Where would you lead your death squad first, Morgoth? Jesmond or Gosfath? It's all the same to me. I'm out in the sticks, mate. Well, not Gosfath. These are two areas just outside of Newcastle, which I don't go to. Jesmond's full of students, so that would be the first place, I think.
Would you delete the last few series of Doctor Who?
I think so.
Well, I haven't watched them because the answer. I've in advance I knew that they should. That the answer to that question is yes.
I really hate literally everything on TV now is just like kids' TV.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't actually watch TV or own one, but also I'll give a shout out to my good friend Tony Hayes, who's a longtime commenter at Morgoth's blog and probably the number one authority in the country who wears a little hat and who doesn't. And yeah. He often sends me clips of things that he sees on TV, and it is when you're not in that kind of, when you don't watch it at all, it is actually really surprising. It's not just what's said, it's just the very fabric of everything. It's not that it's dumbed down either. It's like literally everything is like a kind of sort of baby food version of what it should be. Everything has been sort of like chewed up and regurgitated and sort of it's kind of fed back to you in like a completely sort of sterilized, harmless way that like nothing about it can ever be taken the wrong way, or no one can be possibly take any sort of offense to everything. There would have been a time when, you look at sort of TV in the 50s, 60s, maybe earlier, when it was like kind of mainly sort of upper middle class, mature, educated white blokes. What we have now is just this kind of like, literally everything is like the kind of kids version.
All right. So I've got a couple more. There's a lot of questions coming in. Thoughts on Nick Fuentes? I like him. I think he's funny. I don't have time to watch like really long live streams and stuff, but they've got like, I sometimes come across these little clips of them going off on our one, and I like it. I think he's funny. He's funny, Nick Fuentes. Yeah, I'd love to be able to talk like that. I would sound a bit weird if I did, but that kind of really quick rat tat 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 kind of patter. I don't have that, but he's one. What was it on the YouTube censorship he did the other day, calling out a week or two back I saw a clip, and he was calling out the kind of the cooks, the conservatives for not standing up against ADL censorship. I thought it was a just brilliant sort of stream of consciousness. Yeah, he's okay, Nick. No problem at all. I was going to answer that. Yeah, there's another one, and it says, have you seen the original Lost in Space or Once Upon a Time in America? Lost in Space was on Channel 4 when I was a little kid, and it had Robbie the Robot, but I was really too... I'm actually not that old. I certainly not to see it the first time round. I don't have much to say on it. there was a classic one which reminded me of what was the sci-fi film called with Leslie Nielsen where it was on a planet? It was a Planet Terror or something?
Forbidden Planet, wasn't it?
Forbidden Planet. That's got a lot of strange ideas in it, and I might revisit that one sometime. Take another look at that. I think there might be some interesting things to dig into in that one. Once Upon a Time in America, of course. It's got one of the most beautiful soundtracks to any movie. It's Sergio Leone, of course, who did Once Upon a Time in the West. And if you go to Morgoth's Review blog, I've actually done a blog post on that. And Once Upon a Time in America is the Little Hats Gangsters. And yeah, so it's funny because that's one of those movies that kind of sunk without a trace. It's become more of a cult classic, even though it's a masterpiece, and it's the content of the movie is why Hollywood didn't exactly shower it with praise and awards. So just again, I came to that movie late, and I've always liked my movies, and I think I was about 22. And I thought, hang on a minute, this movie's amazing. It's got Robert De Niro in as a gangster, and I've never heard of it before. And that was a real mystery to me, especially because it was so good. Well, of course, you understand why it was memory hold, to some degree at least.
Yeah, I can't see the words award-winning now without just seeing them surrounded by brackets just echoing into infinity.
Well, I just got another one there. I'm reading the ones with the. Have you seen? I don't watch anything on Netflix at all. I don't have Netflix or anything like that. I don't. I've got nothing. Nothing like that at all.
I did hear about one. They did a documentary about the family where it's basically a conspiracy documentary about this Christian organization this Christian hidden like secret society that's supposedly governing world events. And Netflix is just, that's all they seem to do these days is just pump out these obviously like Levantine propaganda or anti-white propaganda. And what they did another one before that as well where they were getting all these black people fired up, and you can go on Twitter and see about how they've just seen this thing on Netflix and now they hate white people. And
yeah, I remember that.
And that, yeah, what was that called?
I can't remember the actual show.
They've done a few like that anyway. And before that, they did Dear White People, which was another. It's just like non-stop, just anti-white propaganda. And I think lots of people probably know at this point, but the founding CEO of Netflix is, we probably spoke about this before on a live stream, I think. He's like the great nephew of Edward Bernays, and he's also related to Sigmund Freud. So they're like these old small hats who have a history of like programming people through mass media. And
yeah, I think I can't actually remember what it's called, but the one that you would
mentioned. When They See Us. Someone said When They See Us is what that was called.
I thought it was those five blacks that raped that woman in that park and kind of.
I think that was part of it, wasn't it? And then, but the whole thing was just basically designed to get black people to hate white people,
yeah,
and blame more black people's problems on white people.
I was just going to say, there's a question came in from Perfect Wagnerite. Morgoth, do you agree that music died in 1883? Now, Theberton's the one for this. I don't think I would go that far. But I know where this is coming from, and so does Theberton. So I'm going to hand the whole thing over to him because he's going to have a field day with it, aren't you?
Well, yeah, what he's referencing is Wagner essentially finishing classical music. And yeah, I can see what he means. Yeah, you if you wanted to sort of draw the lines in the sand, you could say that he sort of took it as far as it was going to go, and everything after that, you know, was you could sort of see as kind of the birth of modern music.
Yeah.
Wasn't that part of that series on Spengler where he was talking about how once culture goes through a certain cycle, it gets to the end where it goes through the zombie phase of the cycle, and Wagner was right at the end of that, and he took everything that was He just did it all over the top, even though the culture at that point was in its zombie phase.
So it's even what's weird is that it's even sort of embedded within Wagner. It's as if Wagner was telling the story of that process in itself, and it's literally called the Ring Cycle.
It was like the last hurrah of what we now consider classical Western music.
Yeah, but also the sort of the European ideal. You've got German idealism. Of course, it did have a kind of resurgence in a virulent political form in the 1920s, 30s, 40s. But all of that comes from German idealism. And Wagner was sort of, he ended it. There was nowhere left you could go after that. That is the point of what a lot of philosophers would say and what this question's getting at. Nothing better came after Wagner. It was like European culture, high culture and ideals could not be improved after Wagner. It could only go downhill. And so a philosopher like Spengler would remark that that was the case. And then with Heidegger, you had also the closing of European metaphysics in philosophy as well, and this is the cycle. So yeah. It's heavy duty stuff, but yeah.
Well, one of the reasons you could say that it kind of ended it is because what he developed was essentially like a synthesis of all the great European art forms in one. Like he, you know, intentionally set it out that way. Like I think it's called the Gedanken und Werk, which is the, you know, so if you just sort of simplify it, it's like Beethoven plus Shakespeare equals Wagner. You know, so there's lots of people who, you know, he's often sort of cited as being sort of conceptually the sort of, it's like the birth of film in some ways. I mean, film is interesting because it's a kind of like stacking of all the other art forms. You know, so you have obviously you have kind of literary scripts, you have acting, visuals, music, all of it is kind of stacked in one place. It's why it's like, you know, arguably some of the most sort of powerful art form, certainly in terms of like propaganda. And so, of course, in the late 19th century, that's what Wagner kind of took to its sort of highest point, really. You know, with the sort of combination of like a Shakespearean style tragedy, that kind of level with, you know, the most intense and sort of grandiose and sort of laden with myth type music, and it was a real sort of culmination of all that.
I mean, on a related question, somebody put J.R.R. Tolkien despised Wagner for using the same source material. I don't see how he could despise Wagner just because Wagner got there first.
I've not actually heard that. And
never heard that before.
He sort of unconvincingly denied that he was influenced by Wagner's Ring Cycle, but I don't think a lot of people actually kind of believe that. There's obviously like a huge influence there. I mean, it's not a criticism, just the way it is.
And somebody else, White Owl Morgul, did you watch that Twilight Zone episode, The Obsolete Man? No, I get a lot of suggestions, and I can't look at it. But I mean, does anybody know what that's about? Because I've got to say, you know, when I see a title, The Obsolete Man, I can see why somebody wants us to watch that, because it's the kind of stuff that I would moan about quite a lot. I can see what's in there.
No, I'm not actually
familiar with that. What's that then?
No, I just said I'm not actually familiar with that particular episode. If I read the description of it, it might jog my memory, but I can't remember which one it was.
Somebody says, have I seen Logan's Run? Yeah, a long, long time ago. Is that the one where they kill you when you're 22 or something?
Yeah, with the sort of the gem in the hand or something, isn't it?
Dark City, there's a good one. Yeah. Dark City is an underrated classic, and it's strange because the Dark City was crushed by the Matrix, and they've got similar takes on it. But the Matrix in Dark City, they're making the city up. You in the Dark City, you've got these alien creatures whose world is dying, and they're this kind of parasitic race, and they're in the shadows, but then each night they change reality, and it's one huge sort of gothic city that they've constructed. And then each night it all changes, all of the architecture changes, everything. And there's somebody who can see through it and sort of gets to the bottom of it and solves it all. And it turns out it's this race of mind benders who's playing tricks on humans and keeping them enslaved that way. But for whatever reason, Hollywood didn't really promote it, but they did promote The Matrix. And because they were similar kind of movies, and The Matrix crushed Dark City. Dark City, I don't know if it is as good as The Matrix. It's certainly not as fancy looking. But, it's an enjoyable go.
Yeah, I mean, when you say The Matrix was more promoted, I mean, I don't want to be too negative, because I actually think it's a really good film and also interesting ideas. But looking back at it, you can see that the tropes that we are incredibly common now were there with the sort of, you've got Morpheus as the sort of magic Negro, and when they go and see the Oracle, it's like it's just like some black woman, isn't it, in some like rundown apartment. And you know, I can see why people criticize that sort of stuff.
And it also had things where he has to chase the white rabbit, and he's the chosen one, and they're trying to get to Zion, and it's all these.
That's in the second two, isn't it?
I think it was in the first one as well, wasn't it? And that like one of the first things. One of the first, when he's in his apartment in the, he's like hacking his computer and he's getting messages about how he has to chase the white rabbit. And I think also I've seen he has a passport where it expires on September 11th. And that's another thing that supposedly predicted 9/11. And it's quite laden with things like that of people who are in the know and,
we could do a whole stream on that, like, but somebody says, I don't want to be on all night. This was just a sort of test stream. Do you agree, Alf Garnett, love thy neighbor, etc., put on rid of our sense of patriotism and soften us? Yes, I do. And I'm pretty sure that Alf Garnett himself is a small hat.
Yeah, his name was Warren Missell, but he changed it to Warren Mitchell.
Yeah. So, all right. So this is when you do see like he's become this sort of meme of an ignorant, dumb little Englander, which was easy. What they did there was to create a straw man of English patriotism and the English nationalist. So here you've got a small hat who concocted the whole character with, I don't know who else, I don't know who the writers were, but you know the story. Everybody in the chat, everybody watching knows the story. And so what they've got then is this, so if somebody, let's say like Enoch Powell at that time, then very quickly you also get Alf Garnett, who was almost like a kind of parody of Enoch Powell, like this, but except he's not nearly as articulate, and he's the idiot down the pub who's the racist moron down the pub. So you can see, I'd absolutely agree with that question.
Yeah, and this is in the this tradition has carried on as well with Sacha Baron Cohen's another obvious one, who what's that film? Is it Grimsby, where he plays the kind of white working class moron?
Yeah, I didn't see it. I mean, he does all of Sacha Baron Cohen's characters. They can come across. They come across as it's politically incorrect, but they're not really, because there's a clear line. What was the Borat? In the case of Borat, what you have is this caricature of the kind of Kazakhstani, and he's like this dodgy anti-Semitic stuck in the Middle Ages like scumbag. And then you get the one where he played the dictator, and that was a parody of Gaddafi, And then, of course, you is often other characters are of like white, dumb whites. So you can see that in actual fact, it's not that politically correct. In actual fact, it's just a sort of a parody and a poking fun at people who his people don't like.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing is designed to make people who like have misgivings about the particular group. It's designed to make them seem ridiculous, and it ends. It's like, yeah, at one point he's interviewing someone, and they tell them that they're a member of the group, and he like cowers away from them, and he acts like they've all got horns, and he was singing that song where throw the person down the well, and all of it's just specifically about like programming and. Or what's the word, like preconditioning people to think that it's ridiculous. And
yeah, so the actual joke is that the people who think like that, they are the sort of butt of the joke, aren't they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's the idiot who says that, who, like, the real idiot is Sacha Baron Cohen himself, as the Gaddafi, or as the Borat Kazakhstani, or as the white working class far-right thug. So in the middle of all of that, let's say you've got those three characters, they all, like, look in the middle of it, and you can see like where it's all emanating from, because there's one group who isn't being criticized, but who all of those three characters have a habit of not particularly liking. Well, you know, in case of the chav, thanks again, Tommy. All right, I'll move on.
Just quickly, there's another one that comes to mind that's popular at the minute. There's a guy called, his stage name is Lee Nelson. I think he does a sort of parody of a sort of white working class chav, but he's another one whose his real name is Simon Brodkin, and it's exactly in the same sort of tradition.
Even Simon Harris in the chat has just said, throw the person down the well stopped him from waking up for months. So those things, they do like emotionally precondition you to not look for the truth or think that certain truths are not worth looking into because they're ridiculous. And that's specifically what those films were designed to do.
You want to be the guy who is laughing at Borat for saying that and being a moron. That's exactly what and it works. It's very effective. And it's been going on we've just been through Alf Garnett. It's been going on very subtly for a long, long time. And, you know, it's what I try to do, and the reason why it's called Morgoth's Review is because I like to look at this propaganda and break it down, because when you understand it and you understand how it's put together, you can weaponize it, and it works against itself. And you can very easily reach people by doing that.
And once you've had the disease as well, you can't then get it again. Like, once you've been inoculated, you can't actually catch it. And the propaganda ends up working against itself.
And you've done that to so many films as well. I remember like one of my favorite films was Blues Brothers, and then you broke that down, how that was propaganda. And
Blues Brothers, it
just makes you feel like, because that film was so, like, I really loved that film when I was a child, it just sort of makes you even more disgusted once you realize that they're trying to program you and against your own interests with these films that you end up seeing them as a child, and they're basically trying to warp your mind with these things that you get emotionally attached to. It just makes you sort of more angry at them once you realize what it's all about.
Yeah, just quickly to run through it, of course, the idea is that you've got these two brothers, these white cooks, and then you've got the black community in Chicago, and they need to find a load of money to save a children's orphanage for the urban youth of Chicago, and then they go on this road trip and do concerts, and what they do, of course, is totally take a piss out of country music. And then you've got the so-called Illinois Nazis, you have all the dumb cops after them, and then you get the good old boys, the white rednecks, coming after them, and they are teaming up with the African-American community and Steven Spielberg and John Landis. And all of why, so all of these out groups, once again, all of these groups that certain people don't like are just ripped apart in that. And the ones that they do like benefit. It's, yeah. Thoughts on the movie 1984 with John Hurt? I think it's great. I think it's really brilliant. I think it's the general feel of it is so run down and so bloody grotty. And even the Eurythmics kind of synthy soundtrack, I think, works well with it. I think it's a top film. I'm happy that we got that 1984 movie with John Hurt, and it wasn't sort of it hasn't been cooked. I've noticed that they haven't made like a 1984 remake Hollywood movie, considering that it's as the concept and the book, it's something that everybody is talking about in discourse and, you know, online. People are writing about it and discussing 1984, and yet, you know, the system hasn't, you know, chucked $50 million to make a full-blown 1984 remake movie. Funny, well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that might be because it's one of those things that everyone in each sort of political corner kind of absorbs it and kind of sees it through their own lens, you know. So it's very popular on the sort of left and the liberal side, and they kind of see it as, you know, they kind of interpret the enemy as, they see it as like a kind of a critique of fascism, don't they? And I think that might be wise, because it's a bit more sort of malleable in that way.
But it also goes to show that you'd think logically that film, they would want to make that film because it would be such a smash hit and they'd make so much money. But the reality is that the only films that end up getting made are ones that are pushing propagandistic messages, and even in adverts and everything that gets made these days, the money doesn't matter at all. It's all about pushing propaganda, regardless of what you would think that the real motives would be in a supposedly capitalist society.
Yeah, I mean, they could easily remake it with, you know, the kind of the far right as the kind of the big brother figures.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they did, and I did a review of this one as well, and it was the same people behind The Matrix, and they are both transgender J's now, male to female. And it was, what was that thing called with John Hurt that they called it, and they had the Guy Fawkes mask?
V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta was basically this, it's awful. And it's basically 1984 by the people who made The Matrix, but this time the West has been taken over by right-wing Christians, and they're persecuting, like, you know, minorities. And they even bring back John Hurt, and this time he is the big brother figure. I mean, you know, I think that was so badly done that it's just a complete disaster.
Yeah. I can't remember Stephen Fry's in that as well, isn't he? Yeah, I can't remember if he sort of portrayed as one of the good characters.
Stephen Fry's in it as the persecuted gay man.
Ah, right, there we go.
Do you know of any major studio that isn't laden with anti-white propaganda? No, there isn't one. It's as simple as that. We have to do it ourselves and then not sell out if you're where you can go, funny enough, where you do get is where the big battle was fought, seems to be computer games, but I'm not an expert on that. But Peter, I have been told by young lads that the computer game scene is not very cooked, but I'm not really one for that kind of thing.
Yeah, Ari will probably know more about it, but there's, in terms of, if he was referencing film studios, I mean, is there a kind of sort of still something uncooked in Japan area, is that?
Well, I guess for the most part they are, because they don't have as much of a presence in Japan. But I have heard things before where there's people who work in like the anime industry where they are basically red-pilled and aware of everything that's going on, and some of them have tried to track down, and they see that certain things are getting massively more funding from basically Wall Street, and they track it down, and that there are like people from the tribe are trying to push certain messages through anime by funding certain things over others. And they also have a central bank there. And after the Second World War, that they basically forced all the powerful people to convert to Freemason. They joined the Freemasonry, so they do have quite a bit of influence over there. But it is still that things do get made that are like just honest entertainment
And it's funny over here, just as a slight tangent, it's really, you never, as we know, it's always the same in all the sort of the race mixing propaganda, it's always the same pairing. And it's just, people often point out, you know, that you never see the kind of Japanese man, white woman, like they're not trying to sort of breed this kind of new race of like super goy, you know, it's always
although they do, I think I've seen it before. I think in Naruto or something, there's a black character who ends up with a blonde woman or something like that. So that it does like sneak its way in somehow to some of the biggest like series over there.
Right.
But even according to if you think of it in terms of, oh, it's Freemasonry that's pushing this and they're getting it from like the Talmud or wherever it comes from. I think in terms of a theological perspective, like the reason they're pushing that so hard, even in the West, is because like one of the preconditions for their Mashiach coming is like the tribes that like sons of such and such a tribe are supposed to be intermixing with the sons of some other tribe or something like that. The tribes are supposed to be mixing.
All right, so there's another super chat which I don't want to leave any of them because it's really great. Cyborg £6, thank you very much. Criticism of foreigners who do not integrate is another form of racism, according to Afua Hirsch. Do you back here on this? Well, I don't really understand the anything about it. I mean, who do not integrate is another form. I don't expect them to integrate. I mean, even when it's like I'm so far removed from Afua Hirsch, it would take me like 10 minutes to explain, to try and get any kind of common ground. But like, the first thing is, I don't want them to integrate, but then you've got to ask, what are they integrating into? And what that amounts to is becoming consumer units when all is said and done. And having this very vague and bland civic identity, which Afua Hirsch herself called British in sort of brackets. So her problem here is that people are criticizing people for not becoming, like, I actually agree with that, but I just don't want all of this to play out in my country. And it's like, this is the problem. Somebody was mentioning about whiteness, and this is a really, what's disastrous about it is the system. Then what they're trying to do is attach what they call whiteness, which means us, to the neoliberal system. In other words, we are one and the same. And so you'll see it now more and more where we need to eradicate, they'll actually come out and say we need to eradicate whiteness. And now there's it's 50-50, because then one of us will think, what the fuck does that mean? Hold on. But what they also mean, they've got to get out, because they can say, well, we're not talking about people, we're talking about a system. Well, all right, so in this case it's capitalism and consumerism. But here's the thing. So too is free speech. So too is having a fair trial. So is democracy. And so is basic civilization. So is flushing a toilet. Or even having running water, for Christ's sake. So which, what are they going to leave standing? And it's a kind of, they're going to get the moral imperative to tear down anything they like. And then they can just turn around and say, well, that's just whiteness. And if people think I'm exaggerating, consider that Kehinde Andrews went to South Africa and then looked at the complete mess that it was in and then said it was because the psychosis of whiteness still existed in South African institutions. So it's like this metaphysical spirit which they're going to hunt down and purge. And the little hats in the universities and in think tanks are coming up with this bullshit just as we're going to drop into minority status. So people are going to have to be scared of this.
And you get all these sort of like the frizzy haired mulattoes who are kind of, they're sort of really well versed and trained in all the sort of pill pull. And like whiteness is a good example of that, because I'd rather they just came out and said white people. But it's this kind of like, they've always got this kind of intellectual academic kind of argument of sort of get out clause by saying we don't really actually mean white people directly. And it's all just, everyone knows what they're talking about, really. Also, that Alpha Hirsch, like she probably understands the sort of the modern paradigm in some way, because there are a lot of people who have this kind of 90s idea of equality, which is that, you know, people are going to sort of, they come over to the magic soil and they kind of integrate and they fill the churches and they start playing cricket. But we're just so well past that now. Like, but everyone knows that isn't what happens. Everyone knows that's not true. So what we have is a culture of different cultures. You know, so that is the new thing. Like, everyone knows that they don't integrate. So we have a multi-culture. That would be, you know, when some people that say that people should integrate, I can see, well, you know, from her point of view, why that is kind of outdated.
Yeah. All right, we've got a couple of super chats. Well, I think we'll wrap up at about 9 o'clock, because it was just a test run. There'll be bigger things to come. We've got MP Fat, your thoughts on Jay Dyer or Mark Dice? I don't really know much about them, especially not Mark Dice. I'm not really into that American kind of scene. I don't really watch that stuff, so I can't really comment on you know, that kind of Trump sort of stuff. Jay Dyer is one of those channels where I always want to watch more of his stuff, but I've just never got time. I'm not really like that clued up on other YouTubers. I've got a few channels that I watch, and that's it. I'm not really an expert on the YouTube scene. But Jay Dyer, I think I watched him on GF about a year ago or whatever, and I think he's one of those ones where he comes out with some interesting stuff and seems really smart, but I just haven't had time to watch his videos, so I can't really see it. Niall's second channel, $4.99. Thanks very much, the MP, as well. That was €5. Thoughts on Patriotic Alternative? Would you ever consider being a speaker at something like this? Good show and great guest. Thanks a lot. Well, we were just talking earlier in the stream. I think I'm really happy to see it, and it'll be very interesting to see what comes along. It's going to be great stuff, and it's going to be great for us to have our own thing to get behind, and instead of sort of just criticizing everybody else, and we can have our own people in our own organization to shill, or at least, you know, one that we're very close to, and we kind of know some of the people involved. And because, you know, you can, when it's happened to me, God knows, where you're critical of somebody else, and your comments fill up with people, well, what are you doing? You're just sitting on the internet. In the future, there's going to be more. Will you be doing this speaking at something like this? Yes, probably at some point I will. They're going to do it, just going off what Mark was saying the other night, it's going to be like a north and south one. It could very well be that I show up at the northern one, so we'll see. One of the things, you know, people tend to think I'm a bit antisocial in this regard, but it's just that you've got to drag me kicking and screaming out of the northeast. I'm not much on traveling these days. So I think we'll take one more. What have we got? You should do a video with Dr. Edward Dutton. Yeah, again, I've heard that he's great. He was at the event at the weekend there. I haven't watched his stuff. I know I'm terrible like that, but it's right. So I think we'll call it a day. I don't know, how do you switch this off?
I'm not sure, mate. You're the one who started this.
Right. I've got a big red button. That's why I like Streamlabs. What's this StreamYard? I've got like big red and big blue buttons. I can't really go wrong. So I'm going to catch us later, folks. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and I'll be doing more live streams in the future.
Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.